Over 30,000 children in Colorado are homeless, and that means they may not have access to medical aid and food. And we're throwing money at the problem, but that might not be enough. Our guest is Jay Levy. He is the author of The Pre-Treatment Guide for Homeless Outreach and Housing First, helping couples, youth, and unaccompanied adults. Jay, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Jay, when I hear that there are so many without homes in Colorado, it makes you wonder, is this mostly due to the economic hardships of recent years?
Well, look, there's certainly multiple and complicated causes to homelessness, but there's no doubt that the economy plays a large role in all of this. You know, the economic engine that produces unemployment, underemployment, issues with housing affordability certainly comes to bear. But on top of that, you know, we've had a homeless problem in good times and bad for many years now. And so when you look at the causes of homelessness, whether you have issues with domestic violence and women, for the most part, fleeing their partners, or veterans coming back from war, or youth that are running away from perhaps abusive situations, you got institutional discharges from hospitals, natural disasters that might cause homelessness, as well as sometimes underlying mental health and addiction issues that contribute to people's plight. And even once they're homeless, those types of issues worsen.
Now, I just want to ask your opinion on this. Officials at some of the homeless shelters here in Denver say the legalization of marijuana has contributed to an increase in the number of younger people living on the city streets. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't live in a state where marijuana is legalized, so I have really no idea what the data shows on that. That sounds like that's a relatively new thing, new law that came into effect. And I'm not aware out in California, where certainly it's been legal for longer periods of time, of people making that correlation. So there has been, I could tell you, across the country, an increase of youth homelessness, whether, and that's regardless of whether marijuana is legalized or not.
But drugs or substance abuse probably play a big role.
Oh, yeah. Quite a few people who are homeless struggle with addiction, struggle with mental illness, struggle with medical issues. So there's no doubt that plays a role. But if you look at, you know, the homeless plight over, you know, decades of us having this issue in the country, you know, there's times like in the 80s where we could say there was a crack epidemic and we saw a spike in homelessness, and some of that could have been attributed to crack. There's right now an epidemic in many places with opiates, and that's really become difficult because people are ODing, people are dying, and certainly you see that among the homeless, and one of the causes of people ending up out there.
I think there's a myth out there that when people see a person wandering the streets, they think, oh, they prefer that life. It's what they want. But that can't be true, is it?
No, I don't believe that to be true at all. And I'm glad that you brought that up. What we find, and you know, I've been doing this since the 1980s, doing outreach in places like New York City, Boston, even in the woods of western Massachusetts. And that is, as you get to know a person and you develop a sense of trust with them, and you understand a person's language base, so when you make an offering, whether it's housing or a particular program, a pathway toward treatment, when that offer is made, it's done in a way that can resonate with the individual, and they have the trust in you to really and truly consider it. Now, if you meet with a person, they don't know you well, they think you're coming from a place of authority, you make that same offer, and they'll refuse it very often. So what happens to the person's psyche when you're homeless and on the streets for many, many years is you've lost so much. So the one thing you kind of grab onto often is one's sense of autonomy, and you're also very leery of people, you know, approaching you and saying, well, why don't you do this or just do that? So it really has to work within the confines of a trusting relationship, a common language that's formed, and an offering that can be made in a way that resonates. And this is what I write a lot about in both of my books, Pre-Treatment Guide for Homeless Outreach and Housing First, and Homeless Narratives and Pre-Treatment Pathways from Words to Housing. You know, it's really telling people's stories, what the whole outreach process looks like, and how we can follow a basic model of helping, which I call a pre-treatment guide.
Our guest is Jay Levy, and I want to ask you some of the questions regarding about some of the points you bring up in that book. Why is it better to get the homeless permanent housing than address the underlying issues of homelessness?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for many years, what was happening is we followed a model of treatment first. And so what that meant is we would meet with people, gain their trust, and say, let's get you over to a detox, or let's get you over for mental health treatment, or you can go into housing, but first you have to show that you're going to take your medications, or first you have to get 6 months sobriety in, and then we'll get you over to permanent housing. And what we found over time is that helped a number of people, but there was a growing segment of what we call long-term chronically homeless folks that wasn't helping or reaching. And those folks, basically due to the eligibility requirements to get into housing, were being left out literally and figuratively in the cold. So what the research showed over many years as we tracked that outside population is there was very high rates of people dying. Mortality rates were rising. In fact, there was a great study done back in 1998 on the streets of Boston by Dr. James O'Connell, and they found that if you were unsheltered for 6 months or more, you lived on the streets of Boston in this case, if you fell into a certain number of various categories, you were at high vulnerability of death. And the rates of people dying were 40% or more. The average age of death was 47 years old. And it was things like if someone had a history of frostbite and they were outside 6 months or more, they were at high risk of death. If they had a history of hypothermia, they were at high risk of death. If they visited emergency rooms three times for three consecutive months, you know, the people that we say, oh, they're just asking for drugs or alcohol, and they're crowding the emergency rooms. It actually turned out that these folks over a five-year period were at high risk of death. More than three hospitalizations or emergency room visits in a year, high risk of death. Some major medical issues like HIV, AIDS, liver or renal disease, high risk of death. A triple diagnosis of mental illness, substance abuse, or a chronic medical condition. If you have all three of those things simultaneously, 40% of that group within 5 years would die. So the thing is this, we wanted to do things different, not have people dying on the streets. And then the other thing we found is that you could bring down the cost. It's very costly to have people living on the streets, ending up in and out inpatient care, in emergency rooms, being picked up by the police, incarcerated. All these things cost taxpayers money. There was another study done, a five-year study of chronically homeless persons. This was out in 2005, 119 people living on the streets. And it added up to them visiting emergency rooms 18,384 times. This is over a five-year period. 871 medical hospitalizations. And so what we found is, and when someone's living outside, the average cost is over $28,000 per year just in medical care, compared to $6,000 if we get them housed with a good support service. So that really makes a difference, and that's without even considering some of the people that are out there, like Million Dollar Murray. Mr. Gladwell did a great article in The New Yorker about Million Dollar Murray and this idea of people that are drinking day-to-day, going in and out of emergency rooms and hospitals, and over a 10-year period, his bill was $1 million. And every major city has more than $1 million Murray. So the cost can be exorbitant, and the way to bring that down is a good support service. And if we go with housing first rather than treatment first, we can save lives and bring the cost down. Permanent housing is something that we definitely prefer to going through all these steps of programs and trying to move a person from place to place, because we find through all these transitions, a number of people were returning back to homelessness.
Now, you mentioned chronic homelessness. Those are people who stay homeless for longer periods of time as opposed to transitional homelessness, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so there's been studies done, and one of the things was by Dennis Culhane, and he found that when you looked at who's homeless, and he looked at shelters in Philadelphia and in New York City, about 80% of the people that are homeless are coming in and out mostly for economic situations. But there's another 20% that's considered a chronic among either the long-term homeless or having multiple episodes of homelessness. And those folks, those are the folks we're talking about that we want to target through housing-first approaches, not the short-term homeless folks that are coming in purely for either economic issues or lack of support, and maybe they had a divorce, they lost a support system somewhere in their life. Those folks we think we can rapidly rehouse and triage through the shelters and very quickly get them back on the road to wellness and stability. But the chronic homelessness, that's where it's where the rub comes in terms of the high cost, the risk of death, and we want to do what we can to get people on a path toward healing.
Our guest is Jay Levy. He is the author of The Pre-Treatment Guide for Homeless Outreach and Housing First. What are some of the more encouraging efforts that you see that is helping this problem?
Well, certainly the Housing First initiative that I touched on, there's some real renowned programs such as Pathways to Housing. And that's in New York City and in lots of other places across the country, and they've been very successful in their rates of housing people and keeping people housed. And again, this is all chronically homeless folks that they're taking into their housing. Out where I live in Massachusetts, we did something called the REACH program, where we literally went out and met people on the streets of Springfield, Massachusetts, brought them into housing, whether they were drinking, had major mental illness, whatever it is. We got them housed if they were long-term homeless and at high risk of death. And what happened with that is we successfully were able to house these folks, able with a very extensive support service, help them to be successful in their housing and as neighbors and in the community. And that really involved that the same people that were doing the outreach and meeting these folks and able to gain their trust also provided the housing support service once these folks are housed. And we really followed a pre-treatment model of helping that I talk about in my books, which is based on five major principles of care. The first is relationship building and the stages of engagement. And from there, getting to the point of developing mutual goals that are based on the person wanting to maintain their housing or potentially go back to work or whatever their goals may be. It's important that those goals are done through a common language that resonates with the person so they can really own those goals, that it's really coming from them as opposed to coming from us. So common language development is another basic principle that I talk about in the book. We promote and support change by looking at the different stages of change and how to help someone to contemplate new ideas and ways of putting some of those ideas into action in order to, whatever their problem might be, to try to make that better. So it could be an issue with addiction, it could be an issue with paying rent, you know, it could be a very concrete kind of issue. We find that over time, whatever the issues are in housing, whether it's paying rent, getting along with neighbors, taking care of your place, if there's also a mental health issue involved or a substance abuse issue, we're able to reframe those issues in regard to the basic tasks of living well in housing, and that really works toward promoting people to get on that path toward change. And we're very big on promoting transitions, and so when someone is first transitioning into housing, we're there, we're orienting them, we're with them, and if they're ready to take a step toward treatment, we're taking them to appointments, we're introducing them to the idea of treatment, we're getting them ready for the language of treatment. Anyone that's gone to AA or has heard about the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, they know there's a whole language involved in that kind of approach. So you have to prepare people for that language and what a meeting's like, or we come up with some alternative way of reducing one's alcohol or substance abuse consumption by adding meaningful structure into their lives.
You know, some of the things we're talking about, Jay, kind of make me feel a little helpless. Is there anything we or our listeners can do to help the problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. On my website, jayslevy.com. I have a list of ways of helping, and it goes into a listing of basically seven different ways you can help. But certainly, it begins with things like just knowing who are the homeless in your community, and being able to call them by name and say hello, or providing a need item might be another way to help someone. Maybe someone's just in need of resource information, like where the local shelter is or how to access an outreach worker, or where a food pantry is, or a free meal program, or like I said, they might be in need of a hat or some socks or something like that. So those are some direct ways, you know, to help. And then there's helping the organizations that are out there to help the homeless by either contributing your time, by maybe working a meal program. They need volunteers for places like that, or going to your local shelter and asking how you can help. Or if you want to contribute money, you can contribute money perhaps even on the housing end. So you can contribute to a program like an outreach program that you know works with the homeless in Denver and say, you know, I want this money to go toward housing alternatives for the homeless, maybe towards security money or first month's rent. And I'm sure those programs would be happy to take that money and utilize it to help a particular individual with their first rent payment and get them off the streets. And then there's the policy level of helping. So you can kind of get involved and see what's going on in your community. There's something called Continuum of Cares that's HUD-funded throughout the country. And in Denver, there's certainly a continuum of care that is geared toward talking about homeless issues and funding and the type of programs that are needed. And in particular, because it's through HUD, which is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, these continuum of cares focus on housing. So that's a good place to connect with people, get to know people in the community that are doing the work, and ask them how you can help toward kind of what's going down from the feds or the state level in terms of policy. They would let you know the latest bills or the latest votes, or, you know, ways to galvanize support for that kind of help.
Well, Jay, I'm glad there are people like you who haven't given up on these folks. Many, of course, families and veterans. Any final words before we go, Jay?
Well, just that, look, the relationship is central to our work. It's a meaningful cause. I think over time we're making a difference, but at the same time, these are life and death issues, and it's costly issues if we leave it unattended. So hopefully people will continue to gather some momentum around this issue and stay on top of it. And I thank you for getting this on the radio and giving people a heads up.
Well, no problem, Jay. What is the website again where folks can go to find out more about your books?
That would be jslevy.com, jaysleevy.com.
Great job, Jay. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.